Welcome back to Talk Louisiana. This is Jan Swift. I'm filling in for Jim Engstert today. Signature support for Talk Louisiana comes from First Financial Tax and Accounting Service. Our number is 877-217-5757, and we encourage you to call in. I'd like to welcome Jim Gosson, past president of the Gulf Seafood Foundation Board and member of the board of Oyster South. Jim's career in the restaurant seafood processing, manufacturing, and distribution business began in 1972 when he began selling Gulf seafood out of the back of his pickup truck. In the early days of his business, Creole Foods, Jim drove his own 18-wheeler to source and deliver shrimp and red snapper. This quickly evolved into a successful business, Louisiana Foods, a global seafood endeavor that he sold in 2012 to Sysco. Today, Jim is an ambassador for the Gulf region. He's been working to increase a sense of stewardship among the Gulf fishermen, wholesalers, chefs, and us, the general public. Hurricane Ida hit Jim hard, too. He, along with many others, lost his beloved home on Grand Isle. Jim Gosson, I'd like to welcome you to the show and thank you for updating us on where we are and what's happened to Chauvin, Grand Isle, Dulac, and our beloved seafood industry.
Well, thank you very much, Jan, for having me, and I'm happy to be here, and happy to be able to share some of the experiences mm-hmm. and stories that I've heard over the last few days.
Yeah. You know, as we get started, I'd like you to maybe give us a brief kind of overview of the difficulties in the seafood industry. I mean, not only have they been hit by hurricanes like Katrina, Ike, and Gustav, but there was the Deepwater Horizon drilling incident, the pandemic, which shut down supply needs for seafood. This has just been a tough, tough time.
Yeah, I mean, it takes a tough person to be able to go through this, not only mentally, but financially. We've had one major disaster after another. Katrina was really bad, of course, and it kind of put things back because they had flooding in New Orleans, so none of the businesses were able to do business. And then, of course, the Deepwater Horizon oil spill, which everything was pretty much shut down. And then, of course, now probably the worst hurricane to ever hit the Louisiana coast, if not the country. When I see in some of the damages, it's really unbelievable.
Right. And you had told me during Katrina, as an example, that was water damage that really wiped out a lot of property on Grand Isle. But the damage that they are facing right now is still just unfolding. People are just still finding out. But there's the wind is what really wiped out the whole infrastructure.
Yeah, I mean, my camp was built in 1977 and engineered to withstand 200-mile-an-hour winds. My father was a civil engineer and an architect, and it's made it through all the hurricanes, but this thing is ripped apart. My pilings were 18 feet in the ground and go all the way to the roof, with tied in with beams, and when you look at it, I'm glad I wasn't there. People that I'm talking to, it's so widespread. I mean, without there's no water, no electricity, no gas, no gasoline. Even in Lafayette this morning, right, we passed gasoline pumps closed. So it's going to be a big, big, heavy lift. Mm-hmm. And I think we just need to get as many people together. And if you can do one thing for one person, take care of that person, because it's going to take a village to take care of this, or maybe a country.
Right. And we've been hearing anecdotal evidence about how difficult it is even for people that are trying to help to get there. You were talking to friends this morning going to try to give ice and water. People don't even have water to flush their toilet or bathe. I mean, there is nothing. And people are getting flat tires on the way, and then they can become stranded if they don't have spare tires. These are just volunteers going to help. It's that bad.
Yeah, I mean, I think the difference between Katrina hit to the east of Louisiana, and it probably wasn't much wind damage. I mean, it was minor. I had some to my home there. But this was a direct hit in Port-au-Fouchon, and I've never seen anything like this, and I'm trying to go to Grand Isle tomorrow, but they tell me to bring spare tires and stuff. I'm just going to go look at my house. I don't plan to do anything. I was going to take water down to Golden Meadow. I was working with Charles Goodson with PetroQuest all day the last couple of days. They've coordinated trucks to bring ice and water to Homer, to Ochsner's Hospital. It'll be distributed from there. I believe that trucks will leave out tonight or tomorrow. I'm not sure yet. But we're short of ice. All the ice plants on the Gulf Coast are shut down, except for Cameron. There's one there, and there's a couple down in Delcom. But without ice, air conditioning, water, sewerage, it's pretty drastic.
And I had asked you, when can the fishermen get back to work? But this is going to take so long to get them back on their feet because there's no place to stay. There's no ice, right, to preserve the fish that they might catch. And can you even fish with conditions like this? What happens in the Gulf? What happens in the water when a hurricane of this magnitude blows through? What happens to the...
Well, you have so much, all tanks broken, boats turned over. So you're going to have some spillage in the water and overflowing sewage plants. And no, fishing is shut down. And it's going to be for a little bit, And first of all, most of the people that live on the coast have property damage. So they can't work. They have to take care. I have a good friend I've been helping. He lives in Cutoff, lost his roof. And his daughter and grandson and wife live there. And that's just one person. So if you can help one, maybe you can help two. But I have a feeling that people are going to move on to the next big event, and this will be forgotten. And Lake Charles, unfortunately, is still reeling from last year. Right. You go there, and there's still roofs off of homes. So we have a long road to haul, and I'm just hoping that we have cooperation from the federal government and the state government to where we can get and distribute and help people get back on their feet, because it's going to take a while.
Do you have any knowledge of how many people now are in that region, like at Grand Isle? Are there many people?
Well, there's about 1,100 people live on the island, but the island probably swells up to about 20,000 during the summer. There's a lot of beach homes and what have you. It was a major fishing community when I moved there in 72. I mean, they had some tourism, of course, but it was more fishing. Now, fishing is pretty much non-existent except for shrimp out of there today and maybe some red snapper and a little bit oystering. All the oyster farms that were off-bottom culture are centered around Grand Isle, so pretty much every one of those farmers out of business and maybe permanently, because I don't think they're going to have the money to reinvest because it's not insured. And I would think at least 90% of the people live down there have no boats insurance. I didn't have insurance on my home because it was so expensive, and I figured, well, I'll roll the dice, but I don't have to go back there to live. I don't know what I'd do if I had to go back to live.
And I know the fishing industry, most of the people in the fishing industry are generational. They've inherited boats from granddad and dad and probably their homes too. So to not be insured and lose their major investment is really what a big part of this problem is.
Yeah, I guess the biggest disappointment for me is to see the loss of the culture. I loved going down to the coastal and just having coffee with the fishermen and all. Everyone's an entrepreneur. Everyone's in their own little business, and they all have their own little operations. And just how many will be able to come back? We've had so many natural disasters, and of course, when there's no market. You figure every hotel's probably closed in New Orleans right now because there's no electricity. So all the restaurants are closed. And I have a friend of mine that told me they lost $200,000 worth of product in their cooler. So that's just one person. And most people don't have insurance. And that's going to be the problem. How do you rebuild? I would think in Grand Isle, if you're over 60 years old, do you go back? I don't know how long it's going to take to get back to normal. I'm sure it will, but.
Mm-hmm. And aren't a lot of the fishermen, they're older. I mean, they're aging.
Yeah, most of them are older. The children saw the challenges of making money, you know, and maybe 50 years ago was a big opportunity. Today, unless you have, it's a family thing, it's hard to jump into that.
Right, right. We're about to take a break. I want to get you to put your thinking cap on about some ways that, you know, other things that are going on and ways that we can help some people that might be looking for assistance. But in the meantime, we're going to take a short break, and we'll be right back. Welcome back to Talk Louisiana. This is Jan Swift, sitting in for Jim Engstert today. Our number is 877-217-5757. And our guest is Jim Gossin, spokesperson for the Gulf seafood industry. We're talking about the devastation caused by Hurricane Ida. Jim, I want to put a picture on the face of a fisherman before we jump in. One of the reasons I got you to come on the show today, I was at Walmart in Lafayette on Monday and just buying my groceries, and lucky, we have power and our house is fine. And I met a young man and his son, and the only thing they were buying was a fishing pole for his little boy that looked like he was two or three. And I was thinking, as a recreational, never hardly fish, you know what I'm saying? And I thought, look how cute, he's buying a fishing pole. And we started talking, and I asked if I could take their picture, because it was just a cute moment in time. And he explained, I'm from Chauvin. I'm a bass fisherman. And I still was thinking recreational. And I got in my car, and I thought of you, and I thought, he's lost everything. Like, he's wiped out. And that little boy, you know, he wants him to follow in his footsteps. These are the people that you know, right? Those are the faces that you stand up for.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I've known these people all my life, and as time goes on, more and more, of course, pass away, and there's no one to step in their place. And you know, we have such a big infrastructure vacuum going on right now, with no fuel, no ice, damaged boats. But the worst thing is there's no home to go back to. So we have to start there, I think, is how to get them back in their homes and comfortable. And, you know, then we can address, I guess, the other issues. But, you know, things that you take for granted, water. I mean, without water, right, you can't live.
Right.
I mean, you can't flush the toilets. You can't take a shower. You know, and that's probably the only pleasure these people are getting when they come home, is to be able to shower after that, you know, and it's right. Hot. I mean, it's really hot out there right now.
Right. We have a call. We have Jason in Jones Creek on line one. Jason, welcome to Talk Louisiana.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning, Jason.
Yes, sir. Sorry to hear what's going on down there. I'm in the southeast Baton Rouge area here. And this morning I was listening to Lieutenant Governor Nungesser do an interview, and he was talking about Grand Isle. And he was saying that he made a reference that after a hurricane, the shrimp may be more plentiful, maybe stirred up by the waters. So he was also saying that we're trying to get supplies, I believe, to the ice house on Grand Isle so that fishermen could get out there if possible and make do with that. Is that something that generally happens after a hurricane? Do the shrimp get stirred like that, or is that possible?
Well, yes. It probably good for the water. Probably got rid of our dead zone out in the Gulf because it churned it up. But I talked to Dean Blanchard. He has the ice house in Grand Isle. I talked to him a couple of times yesterday. But there's no water going to Grand Isle, and there's no electricity. He said the Corps of Engineers was there trying to set up a generator. And I guess they'll have to barge the water in on a barge to be able to start the ice machine. And he doesn't know if it's damaged or not. It looks like it's in place. looking at photos, but he's there right now, and no one can stay there at night. I think maybe a few policemen and firemen stay there, but I think, you know, it seemed like everything comes back after the hurricane, and it's better than ever, but not the property. You know, the Gulf, it probably does it some good, and because of the dead zone and all the nitrates that flow down the river and cause that, the hurricane stirs up the water, and I guess that's God's way of getting nature back into order. But a lot has to die before it blooms again.
Yeah. Thank you, Jason. How much ice are you talking about to do what Jason called in for, you know, to retrieve that shrimp?
Oh, it takes 50 tons of ice a day or whatever. I mean, a big, you know, to ice down a shrimp boat, shrimp boats leave. They, without ice, the shrimp don't. So they have to ice down each shrimp boat. They have to fuel them. Mm-hmm. And then normally when they come into the dock, they offload them and they blow ice into the holes there where they keep the shrimp. And then they fill them with fuel and they go out. But I think we are ways from that. We just don't have the infrastructure. We're trying to call attention to what we need. I mean, we set up a GoFundMe page on Gulf Seafood News and Gulf Seafood Foundation. Gulf Seafood Foundation's a 501(c). And so we could take that to facilitate. Basically, we want to facilitate whoever needs infrastructure. Mm-hmm. We can't help each individual, but maybe we can help an ice house open. Mm-hmm. Maybe we can help a grocery outlet there, because in Grand Isle, the grocery stores are devastated, the ice house, I think even they had damage at the police station and all that. So it'd be hard to live there.
And you learned that from the last, like with Katrina, you guys learned to pivot. You couldn't go help individuals as much as you could the big picture, because you've got to look at sustaining the culture. And the Red Cross and others, I mean, there are other groups that can come in and help individuals, I'm, you know, assuming.
Well, there's a lot of people that can do those type of things much better than us. I mean, the people that on the Gulf Seafood Foundation board are all non-paid volunteer people that have been in the business. In fact, I sent out an email. I said, we got to get the Blues Brothers back together for one more gig, you know, and that's what it is, a lot of old-timers. But we all have connections from the whole Gulf Coast, and everybody is pouring in wanting to help. It's just where to direct the help. You know, for Katrina, Shell Oil Company called. Our organization originally started out as Friends of the Fishermen. And, of course, we changed the name later, but Shell Oil called and said, if we give you $600,000, what would you do with it? So we facilitated ice plant, which they needed ice plant. Because that, you have to have ice to start the seafood industry. Without that, then we worry about fuel docks. And so we had companies come in, and that's what it's going to take. It's going to take NGOs, the Walden Foundations, all the big to come in and help. And the way I'm looking at it now, it's just to get the family through the day-to-day. And the big picture is going to come, and we're just trying to put all the pieces together. This happened Sunday night. So.
Exactly. It doesn't. It seems like it was so long ago.
Gosh, well, it seems like it's 2 years ago. Yeah. I've been on the phone day and night since it happened. And, of course, you wake up in the middle of the night and you can't go back to sleep.
Yeah.
Think it's a nightmare. But, you know, I'm good. I'm fine. I'm going to survive this, but I just think about all the people that have to stay there and live there, and the mosquitoes are terrible right now. It's not livable.
We have a call too. David is calling in from Atlanta on line two. David, welcome to Talk Louisiana.
Good morning. You guys just mentioned something regarding mosquitoes. There was an article I read somewhere the other day where because of climate change in Louisiana, where we're having more hotter days, it extends the mosquito season, and they've already found some cases of West Nile virus, which could be very deadly, and that's another threat because of climate change. And if the Texas abortion law eventually holds up in the courts, I think the same principle should apply, because Republican politicians, for the most part, don't want to recognize climate change. President Trump believes it's a Chinese hoax. Well, I think the fishermen should be able to sue the Republican politicians like Steve Scalise, who receives an enormous amount of campaign contributions in the fossil fuel industry. And if something is not done regarding sea level rise and climate change, the Louisiana marshes will go away, which is the breeding ground for just about all of the Louisiana seafood. And a major industry in Louisiana will be essentially eliminated. And, you know, many people.
And I'm glad that you brought that up about the real issue for us is our culture. It's about our way of life, about the seafood industry, because that's our lifeblood in Louisiana.
Well,
that's our culture, you know.
Yes, it's what we grew up. It's until you live it, you don't understand it maybe, and it's hard to explain it. Like you said, the little boy buying the fishing pole, mm-hmm. that was the most important thing to him, and it makes me want to cry, you know.
Welcome back to Talk Louisiana. This is Jan Swift sitting in for Jim Engster today. Our number is 877-217-5757 if you'd like to call in. And our guest is Jim Gossin, spokesperson for the Gulf Seafood Industry and the Gulf Seafood Foundation. So, Jim, in our last segment, you know, we had politics brought up in a way. And this is not a Democrat or Republican issue. We have bigger issues maybe with climate change, but right now we need to all hang together. I mean, as a state and a nation, we need to hang together.
I agree. I mean, you know, I'm not, you know, right now there's nothing I can do about climate change or any of these other problems. The immediate needs here are more humanitarian, and I'm sure there is a lot of questions and answers of why, but you know, I know back when they destroyed Galveston, the hurricane killed all those people, you know, we could say it was all kind of reasons. But mm-hmm. I think right now we just need to attack the immediate problems and try to make people more comfortable and give them their immediate needs of right. food, shelter, and water.
And I do want to say, I didn't realize till I was researching for our show that we are the largest seafood producer in the lower 48 states. Louisiana is the go-to place. And the communities of Duloc and Chauvin are among the top seafood ports in the country. And, of course, Grand Isle is a big, big area. So for all these individuals that need individual help, that's one thing. But this is an infrastructure issue that's going to be much bigger than any of us. And I know that's why you wanted to come on today. We really want to let people know what the need is and what the the Gulf Seafood Foundation is focused on. It's been focused on the fishermen way before all these disasters, but now in particular, you're kind of the go-to place for people to get information on what is needed.
Well, I'm fortunate enough to know people across the country in the business, and I think the crux of the deal is people take tourism. Is without tourism, New Orleans probably wouldn't exist. But people come to New Orleans not to eat Chinese tilapia. Right. They come to eat local seafood. And right now, we just don't have it. Mm-hmm. And, of course, even though New Orleans is not open now because of this, but basically, you go to Seattle, you want to eat salmon and halibut. Mm-hmm. You go to the East Coast, Northeast, you want to eat clams maybe and a lobster. And people come here to eat Gulf seafood. But I think the bigger challenge we have is to get people back in place in homes because most of the people can't afford insurance on the coast. My house was $17,000 a year. Well, I decided to drop it 8 years ago. It varies and just, I guess, depending on what area, but it's all expensive. And so a lot of people just kind of roll the dice.
Right. And I know one of the main messages for the Gulf Seafood Foundation has been attracting the next generation of fishermen. That's been a top priority before these disasters. Y'all were looking at how do we sustain this industry. And I know you've been quoted as saying the Gulf is our money tree beneath the sea. I mean, this is an important industry. And one of the good things your friend Ed Lalo that works with you as a volunteer with Gulf Seafood, said that many of these boats, even if they flipped over or went aground, that they can probably be resuscitated. Some were destroyed, but some are still standing, and others can probably be reworked, if I'm saying that right.
Well, he's right, but it takes money.
It takes money and time.
And a lot of them don't have insurance. Mm-hmm. So, you know, what comes the chicken or the egg? A lot of these fishermen were suffering because they had no market during the COVID. And this has been going on for 2 years now. And even after they got back on their feet after the BP oil spill, people had inventory. They couldn't sell it. I helped different fishermen come in. They had no demand right when COVID started because all the restaurants were closed for 2 months. And so there's been one disaster after another. And it's not just one particular thing. Mm-hmm. But it's like now the rug is pulled out and the floor.
Yeah, right. We have a call. Eduardo in Chapel Hill is on line one. Eduardo, welcome to Talk Louisiana.
No, not Eduardo, but Ed Lalo. How are you?
Oh, it's Ed Lalo.
Ed Lalo.
Excuse me. Eduardo, excuse me, too. Ed, thank you for calling in. Hi. Well,
thank
you've got
you
a new name now.
Ed.
Yeah. Ed, thank you for calling in.
No problem. What I wanted, Jim's doing a great job, and you're both doing a fantastic job on this. But the one thing I do want to mention is the fact that it's also important to get our legislators on Capitol Hill involved. I chatted yesterday with James Quinn, who's Senator Cassidy's chief of staff, and Senator Cassidy is definitely going to want to get involved with this, and we're going to have meetings with them very soon. Yule Smith, who and Harlan Pierce, who used to be with the Louisiana Seafood Promotion and Marketing Board, are going to be heading the committee for the Gulf Seafood Foundation on getting the potential funding and finding the donation. Those are companies that want to donate, and then find the appropriate ways to get the best use of the money.
Ed, you're a very eloquent spokesperson for the seafood industry, and I know you've covered a lot of what's going on, both currently this week and in the past, and you've documented through pictures the devastation. If you want to talk about some of your firsthand knowledge that you have in the past week, you know, to buttress what Jim had shared. Is that off? Oh, he's off. Excuse me. Well, Ed Lalo and you, Jim, let me just go back to you.
Yeah, I first met Ed after mm-hmm. the BP spill. I think the Louisiana Seafood Promotion Board helped, hired him to help tell the story, and he did a fantastic job. And in fact, the name of my company was called Louisiana Foods, and at a short time, I thought, well, the name is not going to – people won't want to buy my product. And I talked to Ed, and he said, you know, just hang with it a while. And I remember he came down to Houston and interviewed me. And then I ended up going tell the Seafood Promotion Board, thank you for all the positive mm-hmm. stuff that you did that and was out there. Keep promoting that I decided to not change the name. And of course, Cisco came up. I had been working with Cisco for years, and they came and purchased my company in 2012. And I went on to work with them for a while until my wife came mm-hmm. with pancreatic cancer. But I've been retired since, but heavily involved in the industry and more facilitating things, trying to get things done to better the industry and to make things more competitive for our fishermen.
Right. We have a call on line three. I hope this is right. Jerry in Sherwood Forest. Jerry, welcome to Talk Louisiana.
Thanks, Jerry.
All right. Y'all still talking about shrimp in Louisiana?
We're talking about the seafood industry.
Okay. I got a comment about shrimp. I've been going to South Louisiana for 40 years, have a camp at Leeville, or used to, it's gone. But anyway, The price of shrimp in Louisiana has not gone up in 40 years, okay? It has not, okay? Before Katrina, there were 35,000 shrimp boats in Louisiana. That's legal ones registered. Now I think there's 15,000. Nguyen Cao Ky from Vietnam, which most of you, many of you know who it is, he came to Houma or Duloc and tried to organize the shrimpers, okay, to no avail. But there's something wrong if the price of shrimp in Louisiana, you can buy a huge shrimp for $4.50. The same shrimp is sold everywhere else for $12 to $15 a pound. So that's my comment about an observation, and I'm sure, you know, it's maybe a little bit off, but I would welcome take your comment off the air.
No, I mean, it's not off at all. You're right. I mean, people are still getting what they were getting in 1970. And I think what's happened is we are, you know, global trade. You're never going to beat the Chinese at pricing. We just have to beat the Chinese at quality. And, you know, there's always a market for a prime steak. It's not for everybody. And my suggestions to the industry is let's make it the best, because it is the best. If it's handled the best, it's going to be the best. And but it takes marketing, and there's so many different people trying to market. You know, the Gulf shrimp is Gulf shrimp to me, whether it comes from Alabama, Texas, Florida, Louisiana. And we need a coalition for the Gulf, and we also need a national seafood coalition. The Chinese promote theirs, the Indians promote theirs, and we don't really have a national coalition. And I think that, you know, we're getting off the subject a little bit, but I think that we need to promote our product not as the cheapest, but as the best. There's always a market for the best, if it is the best.
But, you know, like the beef industry, they have big marketing campaigns. They have a coalition and paid lobbyists. Your industry, like as you said earlier, the volunteers. And these fishermen are individual fishermen that probably don't have the funds to support lobbying efforts in Washington and at the state capitol here in Louisiana and Alabama and so forth. It's a different deal, right?
It's totally different. I mean, it's usually you're dealing with the wife when you call. She's sending you the bills, and the husband's out working, and the wife's taking care of the home business. And that's why we go to Washington. That's why we go to the legislature, and all the volunteers of the Gulf Seafood Foundation go there for nothing. I mean, that's all we can give back. Because right. They don't have the wherewithal to
do
it.
On your own nickel, yeah. It's good time for one more break. Please stay with us. Welcome back to Talk Louisiana. This is Jan Swift sitting in for Jim Engster. Please call us at 877-217-5757 if you'd like to call in and visit with our guest, Jim Gossin, spokesperson for the Gulf seafood industry. Well, Jim, this is our last segment. I want to get in a couple of questions, and we have Ed Lalo back waiting on the line, too. What is the impact for us as consumers? What can we expect in the next few months, year, about getting our Gulf seafood?
I think we're going to have shortages because if it's such a broad you will still get shrimp out of Florida, Alabama, but Louisiana will be kind of shut down. And I think what the problem is, when you lose a market, that market has to go somewhere else to buy. And sometimes you never get that back. So if I'm supplying shrimp to Walmart, let's say, and I can't supply them anymore, well, they're going to go to somewhere else. Mm-hmm. And you may be hard to get back in that door.
And that's a double whammy. As Jerry was saying, we already are probably way underpriced on a lot of the quality seafood that Louisiana offers. And if you lose your market to cheaper outlets, people get used to that really low price, even though the quality isn't there.
Well, I think that's the problem. We're forced to compete with these imports, and we cannot compete with them. They don't have to pay labor. They don't have to pay the fuel costs that we pay. They don't pay the insurance we pay. They don't pay the this all the rules and regulations prices out the market. Mm-hmm. Even labor is so expensive today, we have to import it. Right. For the plants.
Right. Yeah, it's sad. I'd like to get Ed Lalo back on with us. Ed, thank you for calling back in. I think we dropped the call. And from now on, maybe I'll call you Eduardo. So.
He likes tacos. I know that.
Yeah, I do.
Gulf seafood tacos.
Yeah, seafood tacos.
Ed, how are we doing? Are we talking about what you want to see us talk about? There's so much to cover,
yeah,
huh?
Yeah, there's a lot to cover. And the fact is that the fishermen down there they don't have a real voice anywhere. You mentioned this earlier. And what we were trying to do after the BP spill started, Yul Smith called me in, and we started the Louisiana Seafood News to get their voice out during a time when nobody else was listening. And now what we've done is taking that and build it out to extend to the Gulf. And with Gulf Seafood News, that's what we're trying to do, is give it a voice, give the fishermen, the seafood industry, a voice where they can, where this their stories can be told. And I think that in this time of crisis, it's going to be like after the BP spill. It's going to be needed more than ever.
Is there a way to rally? Like, I'm sure everybody's scattered now. All your fishermen, you know, the people that you guys know. Is this like could it be a labor movement where people realize we actually do have to solidify and not just rely on Gulf Seafood Foundation? You know what I mean?
No, it's gonna take everybody. Gulf Seafood Foundation could put people together and kind of, mm-hmm. and you know, if we can keep enough money to be able to keep the newsroom, because it costs money to travel and to be involved, mm-hmm. and to get down and to really tell the story. But you have a handful of 12 people that's funding everything. It runs out. Yeah. So we need more help from the community or the NGOs, our big companies that can help get the word out.
Right. I mean, it seems like already today the news is, you know, the Texas abortion law and the Supreme Court's short ruling on that and the flooding in New York, which is tragic. All this is tragic, but we're watching Lake Charles a year later, still struggling with no federal funds, and these fishermen are not going to get the same coverage that New Orleans will, let's say. You know, this is an uphill challenge. So,
no, you still on the line, Ed? No, I mean, Ed knows. He dealt with that, and he was on the ground after BP and you know, interviewing each fisherman and telling the story. But it's to get the story out from here. We only have, you know, Gulf Seafood News has a certain following. Mm-hmm. It's get other people to tell the news to where we have much a broader exposure to the problem, and then maybe we can get people to help us. It's going to be a country effort if they want this culture and this industry to survive, mm-hmm. or you want to buy everything from foreign country.
Ed?
I agree. I mean, we need to get the story out. It's important, and I think that we also need to get a lot of younger people involved in getting the story out. Because, as Jim, you mentioned earlier, we're a bunch of old men that are trying to on our last hurrah here. And we need to find the next generation to really keep it going.
What's out there on social media right now? Is it more about just the homes that are lost? I mean, are you seeing much on social media? People sharing, you know?
I want to say that Sea Grant is doing a wonderful job on their Facebook page on getting the stories out. Reuters did a wonderful job on telling the story on the crisis in the seafood industry from after the hurricane, but really not much after that.
Mm-hmm. Are there processing plants in that area too? Is it not just the ice and all these other infrastructure, but processing plants? Are they right close to the?
Yeah,
the
I mean, there's probably the closest processing plant now operating is in. They have, I think, three or four in Delcom. And but you know, most of the processing plants have closed over the years. I mean, it's just a very, very few now because there's just not enough volume. You have a deal like this, well, to keep the processing plant open, they're going to have to go to Texas or the north, you know, Virginia to get oysters if they want to process oysters. So they're going to have to truck them in. Mm-hmm. So you know, it's a snowball effect where the crab plants are cut down because all the crab traps are lost. And mm-hmm. so, you know, one thing after another, and people have to get back in their homes before they do anything. I mean, that's the last thing you can do is work if you don't have a place to come home to.
Would you touch on the oyster beds also? I know there was a lot of farming going on trying to reestablish a healthy oyster production, and that's been destroyed, at least in this area, right?
Most of them were for around Grand Isle, the ones that there's maybe five of them that are operating. I got involved in the beginning 10, 11 years ago with Jules Melanson, and we kind of started Caminata Bay Oyster Farm down there. And, of course, Jules has taken it over. I was just kind of a hobby for me, but I thought we could elevate the value of an oyster because the East Coast was getting three times the amount of money for our oysters, and if we had a way to brand the image and produce a better oyster, a hand-picked oyster, as I said, somebody asked me, what's the difference? I said, well, you can get a shovel-picked or a hand-picked. Yeah. One costs different than the other. And so that was our idea. Every oyster was the same. It was grown in cages. But that's not the answer to the industry. That's just a small segment.
Right.
We
right.
need the wild oysters or the industry does not survive.
But they've been hit, too, with all these environmental changes.
Right. No one shucks a farm-raised oyster in a cage. It's too expensive. It's so all the oyster meat and all that, we need the wild oysters to thrive and survive. It cleans the water in the coastal communities. It provides habitat for other fishery, and everything starts there.
Mm-hmm. You know, I was thinking as you were talking about this, getting the people back and sustaining the industry, the medical industry has gone through a similar thing. You know, younger people aren't necessarily choosing to be physicians because of the regulatory changes and all the – everything's evolved so fast. I mean, this has just been a whammy, seems like the past 11 years for our fishermen. We have about a minute left if you want to maybe sum up your thoughts and where people can look to help the seafood industry.
I'm trying to figure out how to do it from a computer. I said, if I could figure out how to fish from a computer, we'd have all the kids involved. But
Virtual fishing.
It's hard work. It's not flattering. It's like, I remember somebody telling me, I've been in a restaurant business all my life. Oh, man, that's a celebrity job. I said, now when you come home, your shoes are all greasy. You smell like grease. You know, you got to jump in the shower before you go to bed. I said, that's the type of work that is. I mean, there's nothing you know, nothing glamorous at all about being in the industry, but it's a love of what you do. I don't care if you a backhoe operator. If you're the best at it, you have that certain mentality to you, and you be the best at whatever you do.
And these were generational.
Oh, yeah. And taught. I mean, I've been in the seafood business all my life. I can't just buy a shrimp boat and go catch shrimp. I'd starve to death. Mm-hmm. It's, you know, there's all kind of little tricks, just like somebody getting into my business. I made many, many, many mistakes over the 50 years, and I still make them. So, I mean, you constantly learning that the habitat's changing. Everything's changing.
Well, Jim Gosson, I want to thank you for joining us today from the Gulf Seafood Foundation. And Ed Lalo, thank you, too, for calling in. And I want to thank the listeners for listening to Talk Louisiana today. Signature support comes from First Financial Tax and Accounting Service. Thank you for joining us.